They're taken out to mark respect for life's significant moments. Go to a wedding, a funeral, a graduation or a christening, and you're bound to see people wearing hats. The art of making hats, or millinery as it's called, is hundreds of years old. In Philip Tracy, Ireland has arguably the most successful milliner in the world, and we've many others who use their hands to create hats in various shapes, styles and sizes. Now, in her continuing look at all things made in Ireland, Ella McSweeney has visited two milliners for us this morning. Now, the streets today are not full of people wearing hats like it was in the 1950s, but it's still curious to see the power of hats. I mean, they come out, as I said, during those important moments.
They do, but hats have been through a hell of a time. I mean, I suppose back in the cave dwelling times, they were always there as an awareness that, you know, most of the heat goes out of our head. We know this because we put on woolly hats when it's really cold. Then going into the wartime as protection for against weapons, and then very quickly became a symbol of status. Even back as far as the Roman times, the liberty cap was given to slaves who were freed. So I suppose the idea of if you want to get ahead, you get a hat on your head, has been one that has really sort of seeped in, but gone down very, very, very much so since the 1920s. I mean, universally, in the 1920s, in the cities, hats
were
worn.
Everyone wore a hat.
Apart from, what they say is, apart from beggars.
Yeah. So men and women both wore
hats. And children.
Hats. Particularly, though, since the 1960s, hats for men, I mean, not the woolly little thing used for insulation, but as a style thing, really hats have gone.
Those very stylish things. And if you see photographs of Cork or Dublin, you'll see them on people's heads. John Shevlin, when he was 16 years old, when he was 14 years old, used to play on his mother's sewing machine. He thought it was a train, and he made clothes, and he very quickly got into making hats. His father, John's father, set up in 1960 a huge big factory in Malahide, where at the peak of their production, they were producing 1,000 hats a week, many for export. John is now in Cowes Lane in Temple Bar, and he explained to me when and why hats went into decline.
I always remember my father saying that a lady wasn't dressed without a hat and gloves. And that was very much the case. And men wore hats quite a lot. It was another decade later, I think, when the church decreed that women no longer needed to have their heads covered going to church. 70s, around in the mid-70s. And that changed everything. And I also remember at that time, hairstyles were changing. And perms were very popular, and hair colouring. So people weren't, you know, ladies weren't going to wear a hat on top of their new beautiful hairdo that they spent a lot of money on. So that was, both of those things tied in together, I think. When Lady Di came on the scene, she brought hats back. And there was a big boom in England. All the English manufacturers were back manufacturing again. Nowadays, though, there's a lot of imports from China, and the same English manufacturers just don't have the same business. For what I'm doing is totally different, because I'm making hats made to measure. That's not done in a mass production situation.
And he made the last air hostess hat for Aer Lingus. But you met another young hat maker, Irish-Australian, in Kilkenny.
Rebecca Patterson. Now, in 1921, two brothers, Irish-speaking brothers, left County Kerry for Australia. And this was Rebecca's grandfather. And she came back in the year 2000 to sort of rediscover her Irish connections. She was a milliner by trade. She grew up on a farm. She used to weave the straw and use the wild grasses and all the rest. I asked her to show me in her wonderful studio in Kilkenny City how hats are, you know, the first stage of a hat, which is used by this thing called a block, which is a wooden block. And she showed me how a soft material is shaped.
So here's my studio here on the left. Now I have a piece today that I need to make it a pillbox. So I'm going to use a really fine quality straw. So this I've dyed a particular colour red. Red's really big this Christmas. What I've got in front of me is a block. A block is a timber shape in the shape of the head. I can handle it and
see. It's a
bit
like a bowling ball. It's got two holes at the bottom.
Yeah.
And it looks like it's covered in woodworm.
It has loads and loads of holes in it, and that's where all the pins have gone in to fasten whatever I've been blocking on that. Blocking meaning stretching and shaping over it.
Bubbling behind me here is the steamer.
This is the steamer. I could not do anything without this. I used to use an old kettle. Now I have upgraded to an actual steamer that stands up, and I use that to soften the materials I'm about to steam. Okay, I've just placed the straw over the steamer, so it's being softened as we speak. You can hear that. You've got a working time of about a minute after this. The straw is nice and pliable at the minute.
And you steam up the room. The straw around this block.
Yeah. Now I pull it over. So it's like putting a hat on someone's head and I'm smoothing it as I go all the way around.
The pins go in.
Okay, so the pins go in and this is where you might hear me bring in. You need to pull really hard. I'm going to curve that under to give it a nice bubbly kind of button shape that you see gorgeous pillboxes these days. There's a sort of quite a sharp version which would have a square edge, but I do a nice button shape and I curve the edges in to give a bit of lightness.
She sounds absolutely sane. She's not mad as a hatter from the mercury poisoning we talked about on the programme recently. What else did she show you?
Well, I mean, she showed me how this, when the material is pinned around this block, they use this stiffening agent, which in the past, as you mentioned, you spoke about it recently, was mercury-based. And mad as the hatter came from milliners who went crazy because of mercury. But she showed me how she does it.
I'll take you over to the sink. I have a stiffener here that I have prepared. This is a secret recipe. Now, milliners.
What's in it?
Oh, I can't tell you. I'm serious, actually. When I worked for milliners for 5 or 6 years and they wouldn't tell you recipes for things, you have to watch and don't ask any questions.
Well, it looks like a white glue. It's the consistency of fairy liquid. Let me smell it. It smells kind of revolting, but I can't even guess what's in there. So you're painting.
I'm actually going
the top of the hat.
Yeah, I'm actually going to just paint it on. See, it's quite a dangerous thing in the past to stiffen things. They use mercury in their stiffeners. I think it was just one of the components of the stiffening agent. You know, it probably did a really good job, but like a lot of things that did a good job.
Made you crazy.
Yeah, possibly.
So now, would it be more natural materials?
It's still quite toxic. You need to be, you know, careful. And even the dyes and things, you need to be careful using them. Now, I'm just wiping off the excess as we speak. So I'm just preparing a cloth here because we don't want the glue to be visible, but you want, you know, your beautiful straw to retain some of its natural look.
And because what you've just painted on is actually the outside of the hat.
If you go into a department store, they'll be rock hard. The fact that I actually use natural straw and felts, I like them to feel like they're actually what they are. So there's a compromise between losing its shape and stiffening it. It looks like a lovely straw hat, not, you know, a piece of shiny cardboard.
100 years ago, 200 years ago, would this have been the way that milliners worked as well?
Yeah, they're the same processes. It's quite amazing, I suppose, because I was taught by an Austrian lady. You know, she made me learn everything by hand. I wasn't allowed to use glue with her. I've only just started using glue, and that's not the stiffening agent. I mean glue to attach things. The processes I'm using here are the same that they would have used in Milan, where the name came from. 200 years ago, milliners would have used the same process. Flowers, all handmade. I make all my flowers by hand, petal by petal. I dye them. So there's no glue involved. And that's nice to know that I'm, you know, reliving a process from the past. There's no new techniques, really, just a few new pieces of equipment.
So it's the same as ever was. The same techniques, few bits of extra equipment, but otherwise...
Minus the mercury. Otherwise exactly the same. And the blocks, the wood that they use is all the same as well.
How difficult to get the materials used?
Very difficult. That. And Rebecca did talk to me about this. Very hard to get straw, very hard to get very high quality cotton, called Petersham cotton. Hard to get silk, you know, hard to get things that aren't like made of nylon and polyester.
Now, the question of the continuing heritage of millinery, I mean, are there apprentices, are there people, you know, following in the footsteps of Rebecca and Philip Tracy and the like?
Yeah, I mean, John Shevlin spoke to me about this and this idea of one size fit all, which is just the hats that are imported from the you know, Eastern countries, in Asia and all the rest, that there is a difficulty in Ireland that people are being, you know, leaving college, calling themselves milliners, but not having that apprenticeship period. And that idea of 10,000 hours, it takes 10,000 hours to be good at something. And that in and around is around 7 years. And that's, of course, the apprenticeship period. So I think that it's something that certainly needs to be looked at. And of course, the apprenticeship thing is interesting because in Germany they have that, and they have the hats that they give the apprentices as they get better, again being used as a symbol.
By the way, there's another famous Irish milliner, Audrey Hepburn connection and My Fair Lady.
That iconic hat that Audrey Hepburn wore in My Fair Lady, the big black and white one that was about 10 times the size of her, Alice O'Reilly, an Irish lady, made that.
That's wonderful. I don't know whether Alice is with us somewhere listening in or whether...
If she is, please get in touch.
Love to hear from her. Anyway, Ella, thank you very much.
Thanks,
Ella's with me every Monday with her Made in Ireland slot. It's an Athena Media production supported by the BAI Sound and Vision Scheme. For more audio, photographs and video, go to the Made in Ireland Facebook page on rte.ie/today with Pat Kenny, where all Ella's features are podcast. It brings us to the end of the programme, produced by Bernadette O'Sullivan, researcher Mary Mulhern. But now it's over to Cathal Murray.